Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the tire.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Step Up and Speak Out with Trish. I'm Trish Springsteen. I'm a public speaking mentor, coach, and author. My passion is helping introverts and advocates to have the confidence to step up and share their message with those who need to hear it. Now, for those who are in North America, if you want to call in with a question, just contact us on 646-716-7979. If you're outside North America and you're listening in live, just follow that link that you would have come on, which was tobtr.com/926-8337, and just follow the links to put the message in the chat box. And of course, you can always PM me onto Facebook and leave a message there. Now, we're having a few technical difficulties, so I'm waiting for our guest to catch up with us. Meanwhile, I'll introduce her when she gets on. I'm going to talk to you what I normally talk about is our frequently asked question. Now, a lot of people come and ask me several questions, and I really love sharing them on the show because it means that everybody else out there who'd like to know these questions gets to know them as well. So the question we've got today is, we were talking about how to structure a speech, and I was asked, well, what makes a conclusion in your speech really, really effective? And that's a really good question because it's something that not everybody actually gets correct, and it's an important part of your speech when you're putting it together. For any speech, you want to have a clear structure. You need to have a clear structure to be able to lead your audience through your points. As Winston Churchill, arguably one of last century's really great orators, he was asked, how do you put those great speeches together? Now, Winston basically said, you tell them what you're going to tell them, you tell them, and then you tell them what you've just told them. Now, the conclusion part of your speech is where you tell them what you have just told them. Now, that seems simple enough, and most people get that part right when they're putting their speeches together. However, for it to be really effective, there's another part that you have to include in your conclusion, and that's the call to action. After all, you've been speaking with this audience for 5, 15, 30 minutes, an hour, and you've been leading them on a journey. What you need to include to make that conclusion effective is what you want your audience to do with what you have just told them. So there are two parts to a conclusion. What you've just told them, that is summarizing it all up, but most importantly, a call to action. Now, if it's an information type speech, the call to action could be to go out there and put that information together. If it's a motivational or persuasion speech, it could be, I want you to change your attitude, change what you're doing, take what I've just told you and go and do something with it. Or it could be that you want them to sign a petition. You could be an advocate and you want them to go on board with a cause. So for effective conclusions, it has to be two parts, what you're going to tell them, what you've just told them, and then what you want them to do with the information you've given them. That's your frequently asked question for this show. As usual, I'll be sharing tips, techniques, and strategies each show. If there is something you would like answered, make sure you email me on info@trishel.com.au and then tune into the next show to hear your answer. And of course, you can always give it to me via Facebook and send me a PM and I'll answer your question. Now, we would have been having a really good guest this show. We were going to be talking to Mel Beaumont. Mel was a dating consultant, is a dating consultant, a Wingilt man and an author. Unfortunately, at this time, Mel hasn't been able to connect with him. Now, don't be disappointed because she may be able to get on shortly, and if she does, we'll continue. If she doesn't, I'll definitely get her on to the show next time when we're not having so many issues. So what I'm going to be doing with you for the next 30 minutes is talk to you a little bit about my passion, I guess. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about public speaking and some of the things that I think are passionate about it and some of the things that you can take away. Now, why am I passionate about speaking? Why do I think it is an integral part of your business? Well, I'm going to share with you a little bit of a story about where I've come from so that you can see why it is that I share my passion, and I'm very passionate about helping introverts, very passionate about helping advocates, and very passionate about helping authors. I was, and I'm still to a certain extent, am an introvert. When I first left school, my concept of networking was to find the biggest, tallest pot plant, the exit sign, and a clock, and time myself, and 10 minutes, I was out the door. Now, as everybody out there is probably aware, that's not necessarily a good way to network. You see, I didn't like speaking to people. I really didn't. I was quite happy to be at home. And all the jobs that I've had since then, I used to delegate. If it was a network meeting where possible, I'd get someone else to go. If it was getting up to speak, I'd get someone else to. If I had to get up and speak, well, I did it, but I knew that I wasn't very good. So I was missing a lot of opportunities, but I didn't realize that I was missing all of those opportunities. It just seemed to me that, just hang on a second, people, and I'm going to see if I think my guest is just trying to get in, and I'll just give you a couple of seconds while we see if we can get her to do that. We'll just see what happens, and hopefully we might have that guest, and I will then continue with what I'm saying to be able to see how we go, and hopefully she'll be able to join us very shortly. Now, while we're seeing how that's going and she's trying to get in, I know what it's like out there, people. Technology really comes up and it can really get to you. So that was my idea of networking, and I knew I was missing lots of opportunities. Until approximately about 20 years ago, I had a mentor, and this is why I'm really passionate also about mentoring, because that mentor believed in me and pushed me and pulled me and shoved me until I actually got up and started speaking. And guess what, people? I found I loved it, because what I realized was it wasn't about me. It was about my audience. It was about the messages I had. It was the fact that somewhere along the line, there might be someone sitting in that audience that just wanted to hear something. And one or two words that I could say could possibly change their lives. So that's one of the things I actually share with my mentoring clients. When they talk to me about how they, you know, they don't want to come out, they're introvert, they're not sure about stepping up and sharing their voice. It's not about you. It's all about what you can do to help your audience and the people out there. And when you realize that, then it takes some of that pressure away from you, and you can be who you are and you can share your message. Because really, do you really want to be that selfish in that you don't get up and share that message, when the possibilities of sharing that message could change someone's life. Now, when my mentor had helped me to realize that, I've found a whole new leap of being able to share my passion with people and to connect with them. And I also realized, looking back on what I'd been doing, that I had been missing opportunities. I had not been standing up and being an advocate for my business. I had not been the voice that speaks for my business. I had been hiding my voice. So when I realized that, just hang on a second, my poor client is having an awful lot, my poor guest, I should say, is having a lot of trouble getting into here today. So we'll just see how we can go. I'm going to try and help her and see if we can get this going because she's got so much to share with her. I'll just see what I can do to get her to come in and get that link going. You know, sometimes people, it just doesn't work for us. And it's not much you can do about that. However, I give her full marks because she's trying. She's got a lot of information to share with us. And I said, don't worry. If it doesn't happen, that's okay because we will get her back on again very shortly in the next couple of, you know, my next show. And we'll get her back on to be able to share it with us if we have to. But I'm going to be really pushing to try and help her get that link now and be able to come up with us and get to it. I think Mel's got some great information. She's an interesting person, and she's someone that could have been an introvert as well at one stage and has actually managed to come out of that and share what she wants to share with us. So I'm hoping that we can get through these onto the show for you. So that's what was happening, people. I found out that I had been missing out on a lot of opportunities, and we do that in our businesses. When you do your public speaking journey, it's not necessarily the fact that you want to speak from the stage or speak to a lot of audiences. I mean, of course you can do that. But the power in doing a public speaking journey is that you can use all of those skills and strategies in your public speaking journey to help you in your business. All the things that we talk about to be able to get up and speak, you know, overcoming your fear, your mindset, doing your structure, knowing your audience, knowing the time, all of those things are things that can help you very valuably in your business so that you can then get up and be able to make the most of your business and be an advocate for your business. So there I was as an introvert. I suddenly realized that I had messages. And that also means that we all have stories and we all have things that we can share that can be valuable to our clients. Because some of the biggest stories would be the stories that we had to be able to actually start our business. And so those are stories that if we get up and share, will help other people who may be doing something similar to us, maybe wanting to start a business. So that's how I managed to work around being an introvert. Now, the second thing is being an advocate. Now, advocates come in all shapes and sizes, and the definition of it can be of variety. For me, an advocate is someone who steps up and just gets up and has a passion, a cause that they want to talk about. Now, there's a lot of causes in this world. It could be that you have a conservation cause. It could be that you are passionate about taking care of animals, of RSPCA or an animal shelter. It could be that you have a health cause. You could be passionate about a cancer survivor or raising funds to help the youth. There are a variety of causes that you need to be able to step up. And it could be just that you have a child on the spectrum or you have a passion that you want to be able to go to the school and talk about your child. These are all issues where you can be an advocate. And these are all issues where we often feel that we've lost our voice because we don't quite know how can we stand up and share our passion. How can I explain to people that I want them to come onto my cause, maybe so donate some money? How can I go and fight for a change in a curriculum because it's not suiting my child? How do I take the passion out of it, like all the emotion and the anger and the being upset, and be able to keep that passion and make it work for me? So we don't want to take the passion out, but we want it to be less emotional, because when we're emotional, sometimes we don't come across and being able to get our message across. So we want to make that emotion, maybe the anger or the things that we really want to do, we need to make it work for you. So how can I do that? This is where being able to speak can help you. And it's invaluable for those who are on that journey and want to be an advocate. Now, you might have heard me mention how to be an advocate in business, because you are an advocate for your business. Think about it, people. If you're passionate about your business, whether you're working in a business or you have your own business, if you're passionate about that, then you're an advocate and you want to stand up and speak about it. So you need those skills. You need those skills to find your voice and to stand up and speak. So that's why we're looking at how passionate I am about public speaking, because it helps the introvert to come out and share their passion. It helps those who are an advocate, whether for a cause, for their children, or for their business, to have the skills to stand up and be an advocate for that. Now, I never thought that I personally was an advocate. And just to give you a little bit of a background as to where it came to me, was in 2007, there was a day in October. I woke up and I had two children. At the end of that day, I only had one child, and I had lost that child to suicide. Realizing my skills in public speaking that helped me to be able to step up and speak and give a voice to that child who no longer had that voice. And there are a few other things that have happened to me that have helped me to be able to step up and be the advocate I want. And that leads me into our guest speaker today, who is most certainly an advocate for people in the dating area. And I'd like to welcome Mel. Hi, Mel. How are you?
Hello, Trish. A little bit stressed with some technical issues there. Oh, my goodness.
That's okay, Mel. Not a problem. You're with us. And as I said, you are an advocate. I'm just going to do a little bit of an introduction for you, and then we'll get on and getting you to share your expertise with us. So You're welcome. We're going to welcome Mel today. Now, as I sort of gave a little bit of a hint at the beginning, Mel is a dating consultant, a wing girl to men, and an author. Now, Mel is passionate about the imbalance and the emasculation of men. And through workshops and coaching and soon to be an online course, she works with men to see dating differently. Now, this is a really interesting aspect, because you often hear about dating about females. And so we're going to be talking today how men can be seeing dating differently. It's knowing why they want a relationship, but realizing that what they're doing wrong is only half the issue, because women need to play and accept the role they play in dating. Now, Mel spent decades in the corporate world around lots of men, so she knows how to listen. And she passionately wants to help men to find what they want and know what they have to give to their partner. Now, it was after a marriage breakup that Mel entered into the world of dating. And I'm reading here over 70 first dates. We're going to have to just talk about that. 70 first dates. I'm not even sure I could get through two dates. So she's had a lot of experience, and some of that was online. She struggled to find what she wanted, and she couldn't connect with the right people that would bring the mix of go-getter attitude, attraction, and shared values. And she struggled to find where to find the right man. Now, brilliant for Mel, she kept a journal of all this dating activity. So she has a lot of self-development. She's got a lot of information. She's done life coaching and self-developing and courses, and she's grown. And she's bringing all of those experiences to helping men to find the right dates and relationships. So Mel, welcome. Wow, a dating consultant. I'd like to tell us a little bit about, well, I think I need to start with those 70 first dates. what was it like having to go through those? Because that obviously is a basis of where you are now.
Yeah, well, thank you for that very well-researched introduction. Thank you. The 7-8 dates were a time after my divorce, and I guess I'd allowed a bit of time for me to work on who I was, you know, as a new identity when I wasn't a wife anymore. I wasn't his partner for life. And I'd allowed some time, I think it was about 12 months before I started dating. And what I discovered online is, so that most of those 70 were online dates through three different online platforms over in Australia. And they were so fun. They were so frustrating. They were so eye-opening. And they were a bit creepy. And it was frustrating, but it was kind of, okay, the next one. Okay, the next one. Maybe the next one. But after maybe 30 or 40, my girlfriend's like, I hope you're keeping a diary of this because you've got some hilarious stories. And it's like, well, I don't want to laugh at the boys. I don't want to make fun of them, but they are interesting experiences. And I guess it kind of toughened me up quite quickly into not taking online too seriously and not taking myself too seriously. But what I got out of all of it was, it's not that I wasn't ready, it's that I had expectations and I was behave in a certain manner that I would, no guy was ever going to measure up, to be honest. And that's where I started to understand this emasculation thing. Although at the time I didn't have a term for it, I didn't know what emasculation was. It's only since I got into this that I understood that that's what I was doing. I was emasculating men through my independence, through my success, and giving off that persona. So yeah, I think that's answered your question.
Well, it's obviously what's happened then is that it's brought you to here. And I guess the question that was probably going to be the burning question is, how do you help men with their dating? All this experience that you've brought forward, what does that mean? How do you help them?
Through a couple of different approaches. The very basic, easy one is I've developed a framework which helps anybody, whether they want to work with me or not. It's a complimentary tool, if you like. It's not a questionnaire, but it asks questions. And at the end of those 9 questions, you'll have a real understanding of what area you're struggling in. So that's a very easy basic that anyone can do. And sometimes that's enough for somebody to go forth and go, oh, I now understand where I'm going wrong. It's in this area. So the 9 steps are the different parts I see of breaking, connecting with a new woman, breaking it down. Then that can lead into either workshops where we, again, take that framework and we understand what it is that they're either misunderstanding or misreading in a woman. What is it that they perhaps in their body language are giving off that is sending out the wrong signals, or any other plethora of things, because every single person has a different reason for why they're struggling. And the other way I help is with mindset stuff. So literally, quite a lot of us, I'm going to be bold and say pretty much all of us have emotional journey, for lack of a better word, baggage. We all carry experiences and feelings into our next relationship. And sometimes it's easy to be open and see the new relationship for what it is. But sometimes we can't help but carry the old stuff in and kind of maybe sabotage or have expectations or be cynical or distrustful or all of those, again, different reasons we might not be maximizing the best energy inputs into those relationships. So I work with men, and it depends on what they're looking for in different ways.
Okay. And I found it very interesting and very pleasing for you to, when you said that there's a role for women to play too. So it's not just the men getting it wrong, is it? It's really a combination of issues. So what role do you see that the women may be not getting right as well?
I'm really glad you asked that. It's something that took me a long time and a lot of growth and self-awareness to understand. So what was happening when I got divorced, I fell into a really strong independent space. I was a woman in her 30s at the top of my career ladder. And to be honest, I felt didn't need a man. I wanted a man big time. I wanted to share my life and successes with, but I was given off. I had that stamp on your forehead that was basically saying, if a man can't step up and push me, it's his loss. I don't need a man. I can do everything I want, including, and I can, change a tire on my car. It's not on the same level to me, and that's financial, that's spiritually, that's intellectually. Then I'm better off single. So all of this kind of beliefs and personas I was carrying around with me was making it really hard. There was no space. There was no room for a man to step into when I'm having this alpha kind of masculine persona. And so it makes it really hard for any man to be good enough to step in. So my perception is I wasn't owning that. I'm an organized person. I run events, blah, blah, blah. Let him. Give him some space to organize the date. Give him some space to raise a topic of conversation instead of me always leading. And it took me a long time to adjust to the understanding that I'm really kind of holding him back by being so, not forward, but constantly being carrying the reins, if you like. So I believe that women aren't aware that we're doing this to men. And where that comes from is the evolution and the equality that we brought about for women, which is awesome. And in fact, there's still a lot of room for improvement. But what that's done is there's so much empowerment for women. And again, quite rightly, but the modern man and a fairly evolved man, he's kind of not sure where he fits in with these powerful, independent women. Unless we are making space for them energetically, they don't know where they fit in. That's my view of it anyway.
And I think that's a really good view. We raise the bar too high for them in some areas. And, you know, if you don't reach this bar, then I'm not interested. And I think I really like your concept there that we need to hold a space because we don't give them a space to actually fit in and share who they are with us. So do you work with both men and women then, or do you work with the men too only?
I principally work with men. My coaching tools, workshops, everything's written for the man. But I do get many women wishing to participate. And so what I actually do is politely, not screen them, but ensure that they're going to be somebody that's supportive to men who are there. Let's be real. For the listeners, how many men out there would be comfortable publicly saying, I'm struggling in this dating space. I need help. Because really, at an innate level, it's challenging their manhood. Feeling they're not good enough is not something that is easy to put a hand up and say, I need help with this, particularly admitting to a woman.
Look, you're very true. You're very, very right, Mel. I would put it that there would be very few that would be brave enough or confident enough in themselves, because if they were confident enough in themselves to say it, then they're probably not needing your service because they're confident in holding their own space in dating. So those who are coming to you are already feeling just a little bit uncomfortable and lack of confidence. So they'd have to be really sort of to be able to open up with other females around. And even with males, I would guess it's, do you do a lot of group work? Or is it more one-on-one?
I mainly do one-on-one. I do workshops. And what I found when women are in the room, again, I've kind of selected that they are women who aren't man haters, who get the opinion. So there's something very powerful about having each other share their opinions to the other. So you've got the females sharing their opinions and perspectives with men and vice versa. And there's a lot of aha that goes on. And what's powerful is of having what I call my wing girls and my kismet ladies in the room is they're able to gently support the guys and see, and we kind of do a little bit of role playing, and not role playing, demonstration and acting out, like over exaggerating why women do things a certain way, to help men physically observe what that nuance of female interaction, female body language means. And it's beautiful to see the men getting those moments of clarity, going, oh, that's what that means, or that's what I've been doing wrong, I haven't been doing that. And again, that emasculation aspect comes into it. So also highlighting to women, saying, do you realize you just took away his opportunity to be chivalrous, to be considerate, to be kind, because you stepped up there? You actually didn't give him enough of a moment. You were too proactive. And the women get those aha moments as well. So it's a really supportive environment. But yes, getting men to put their hands up is the most difficult thing. And all I can say is you have to believe that I absolutely have your back, and I am only want supportive fun. It's got to be fun, because that's the best way of learning environments. But one-on-one is usually, because then you can be more vulnerable, you can be more honest. And it's a difficult thing when we're seeking love to admit that you can't find it. I know this because I went through it myself. I was so yearning to be in a loving relationship again.
So, and that's probably the power that you bring to this, Mills, because you've been there. You know what it's like, and from both sides in a way, because you know from your side of what you were after, and you know from the experiences you've had through the dating what was happening, and from the male side why they weren't measuring up, and finally what you were doing and the reasons for that. Just going to take a short break there. I just need to do a couple of little announcements, and then we'll come back to discuss more about the dating scene. And I'm going to come back and ask you what a wing girl is. So very shortly we'll find out about that. Okay, you're listening in to Step Up and Speak Out with Trish, and we've had our guest here, Mel Belmont, who is a dating consultant and a wing girl. If you've got questions that you would like to ask on the show, North America, just call in on 646-716-7979. And for those outside of North America, just follow that link that you clicked into, which was tobtr.com/926-8337. Follow the prompts to the chat box. Put your question in the chat room and I'll pass it on to Mel. And for those who want to do it on Facebook, you can PM me your question and I'll pass that on. People, we've got with us Mel Belmont, and we've been learning about the intricacies and the rockiness of the dating scene and just what it is that sometimes can make it really difficult for those poor guys out there to be able to understand what the woman is doing in the dating scene, and for the women to realize just what it is that is maybe stopping those guys that you really would like to connect with, why they're not coming up on your radar, and why they're not meeting the very high standards that you may be putting out there without even realizing it. Now, Mel, I want to know what a wing girl is. Would you like to explain to us how you are a wing girl and what a kismet girl is?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's one of the questions I get asked the most, that and how did I get into it? So a wing girl is, we have all heard the term of a wing guy. So guys having their mates, it probably went back to the days of Top Gear, where guys would go out with their mates and they would either have their mate make an introduction because they were nervous to approach themselves, or they would be the comedian, or they would be the one to kind of help break the ice and keep the conversation flowing, again, if that wasn't their strength. So the wing guy is somebody who literally is helping his mate be successful with the women. So it's basically, a wing girl is the same, only I'm that icebreaker. I'm that one who can help, but I bring it to the next level and help interpret and debrief afterwards. And I think that's a big thing that's missing, not only in a dating space, but in kind of life. We aren't taught in school, we aren't taught in college, and we aren't taught in uni how to do relationships. with anybody. We aren't taught how to do friendships. There's no book issued, no Bible given to us at any point in life. This is how you have awesome connections with other human beings. So we're making it up. We're all learning. We all have different set of rules and beliefs that we're using. How are you supposed to know what the opposite sex is thinking? So I've had a couple of people say, oh, how can you help men? It's like, well, I'm a woman. Now I'm going to put my hands up. I can't proclaim to know what every woman is thinking. I don't think any woman on earth can make that claim. But we can interpret. We can have a much better estimate about what's being said, what's being done through our interpretations. One of the examples I like to give is, how many facial expressions do you think, Trish, that men use amongst their friends, men-to-men facial expressions?
Oh, I would say there would be quite a few that we wouldn't even pick up. There'd be subtle signs that a male is clued on to pick up from another male, and as women, we would just miss it completely. Mm-hmm.
So the science says on average, the average is 10. Men have 10 expressions on an average, you know, an average guy, average day. Women to women, we have 52. So let that sink in a little bit. What does that mean? My interpretation of that is, women are really good at reading other women. We're the peacekeepers. Women would rather hold back upsetting and creating disturbance with somebody, and they control that emotions and feelings, and sometimes it can be expressed through the facial expression. Men don't know how to read all those nuances. They don't practice it unless the ones where I've seen really successful is where a man has grown up with a particularly close relationship with his mom, or an environment where there's lots of women, sisters, siblings, where they're learning. One of my best clients who I've tried him out in a number of different situations, he never gets it wrong. He can pick up what a woman's saying. His problem is the confidence part in the first place. So once he's in the conversation, he's fine. He can read it. He can build the rapport. He can understand what's going on because he was surrounded with four sisters and a mum. So that is just one example of how hard it is to understand the opposite sex. And so as a wing girl, I come in and help interpret and show them the signs. When she did this, her body language is telling you that. And that's the most powerful way. It's about not just teaching, it's about demonstrating, showing, so that the brain waves are changing. Going, oh my, now I can see what you've been talking about in your workshop. I'm actually seeing it happen in life. That's the power.
So let's just explore that just a bit. I'm getting this impression of this guy going on a date with a woman and then taking you with him. Is that exactly what happens, or is it more that you just observe from somewhere else?
There's a couple of different things. It depends on whether it's you've met her before or not. Generally, this is before you've met the date. This is to help you get a date.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll hire me for a few hours where we'll go out into a social environment that matches with his lifestyle choices. So a lot of people assume it's bars and clubs. No, it can be the beach. It could be to a cafe. How does that man like to spend his time? So that's the first thing we work out. What environment are we going to put ourselves in? It could be, I've even gone along to a tennis club. I can't play tennis or anything, but pretending I was a friend, curious about the club and you know, interested in joining. And let's continue with that example. He was interested in one particular female member and didn't know whether she was interested or not. He'd worked out that she was single but couldn't work out whether she was interested in him or not. He's like, can you just come along, be a friend from work, and help me understand whether she's interested or not? So that's one example where it can be used. Another one is where I go out sometimes in a group of four clients, and we just go out on a friend's a night out sort of thing. We go out to sometimes a restaurant that has, you know, an open bar next door, or you've got to be careful, otherwise it looks like I'm dating one of them, and I've got to be careful not to position myself. But I haven't actually gone out on a date with someone. I think that might be a little weird for the lady to have a female friend tagging along on a date. So I hope that explains it a little bit better.
No, that's great. I just thought there could be some confusion out there as to exactly how you could help them. And I think the examples that you've given are the really good ones, because it's, in fact, ladies, look out, it could be dangerous for men to be able to understand exactly what we're saying and doing. It could be pretty dangerous. You could be letting out secrets there, Mel. We may not want them to know.
Yeah, that's true.
I've got a question for you, and I don't know just how this will go, but we've got all these reality shows, you know, The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, and all about dating and meeting people and that. What's your view on these reality shows?
Ooh, that's such a controversial question. I'm trying to actually get onto, as a consultant, to one of the shows, so I'm not going to name any specifically.
I don't need to name them. But
how do I put this diplomatically? It's very contrived. I've actually connected with an ex-Bachelor contestant who was on Bachelor, so it was with the men. I'm actually going to interview him myself. Now, when I first met him and we got talking, you know the rose ceremony, The Bachelor?
Mm-hmm.
He said they would retake three or four times that man being given the rose. No, that wasn't good enough. Do it again. So I kind of think it's a little contrived for viewer ratings. Mm. And I also think that they need certain characters to make reality shows more watchable. So I think just saying that is probably enough of my personal opinion.
Yeah, anybody out there who really, really believes that these reality shows are true to life, well, they probably need to maybe get out a bit more, I suppose, and see what's happening. They are very contrived. I guess what I was wanting to know is we understand that, but what do you think what do you think the effect is on people who may be new to dating, new to this, you know, I'm talking maybe some of the younger ones and that, who really do think that maybe that's what's happening? What do you think that effect is having on the dating scene with them?
Okay, so I'll touch on online dating and use that as a little bit of an example to answer your question. So I've been doing my research, as all consultants do, and what I've found is in Australia, two of the biggest online dating sites have merged. They merged in 2015. And it was bought for a price that was in the billions.
Mm.
Pardon me, millions. And in 10 years since the merge, the value of that combined business went up so dramatically, you can't help but wonder what is the purpose of online dating as far as those owners of the businesses are concerned. Is it to help you connect with love? Is it to run a business? Or is it for something else? Now, I'm not going to, again, pass a specific judgment.
Mm.
So coming back to answer your question about the reality shows, It's great to give people perspective and thinking outside the box and try something else. I love Farmer Wants a Wife. I think they're beautiful people. Again, I think there's a lot of fairy tale perceived and expectations set up by the media. Some of the dates that are created, it's like, do you realize it's a $4,000 date to set up that picnic table with those chairs and that food? It's like, that's not real. Like, only very super wealthy people can have that kind of arrangement. And so I think it's setting up a false sense of reality and expectations that the men should be doing all these grand gestures. and expectations that the woman, those are beautiful moments. I'm not getting anything wrong, but it's a team of 20 people and a huge budget to create those encounters. And then he's just going to go on a different date tomorrow with another person. So I kind of, I don't think they're terrible, but I think a little bit more of a disclaimer perhaps is necessary to understand. It's not organic. There's lacking authenticity in anything that's TV produced, would you say?
Yep, and that comes through, and there's a lot of reality shows, and there's a lot of, and we could probably talk for hours, really, on all the different viewpoints of the effect that reality shows have had on today's society and where it's taking us. So we might just sort of leave it there, but I think thanks for your full viewpoints on that, because it's something that I wanted to bring out, because we see that, and I think your comment about expectations and setting it up is the one that I was sort of getting, thinking, oh, that can be setting up some really high expectations for some people in the dating scene in that respect.
Mm.
So let's move on to, we've got a few more minutes left. What motivates you, Mel? What is it that really motivates you?
Oh, it's an easy question to answer, and it gets me emotional every time I kind of get into it. That is, when I was single, I'm now in an amazing relationship, and I really knew what I was capable of being when I was in love. I know that self-love is very, very important, and it's a big part of coming to terms and accepting yourself, flaws and all. But I believe true love can't be expressed being on your own. True love to me is the vulnerability of placing your heart in the hands of someone else so completely. That is the power of love. And when I come across particularly men, I've got a soft spot for men. They struggle, and I get why they struggle with women. I get why they struggle in this modern day. I get why they struggle with online dating. I want to reach those and make that struggle a lot less impactful. I have several clients who, when we start working together, I've given up. I can't take more heartache. I can't take being hurt again. And it's just so distressing, because everybody is capable of being loved. And if I can play a small part in that, to me, money doesn't make the world go round. Love does. When you're in love, whether you're single or otherwise, but when you're in feelings of love, the world is a better place. You do more productive, proactive, positive things. Those are all the reasons why I do what I do. It's an absolute privilege to help someone connect with love and another being. I can't think of something more honorable.
I think that's really powerful, and that's a powerful why. And I honor you for stepping up and letting yourself know, say that, and for connecting with everybody. What was a defining moment for you in your life?
Oh, there's been a few. I guess there's a few, but without getting too dark and meaningful, one of the ones was when I was 15. I had literally had to escape an abusive relationship with the clothes in my back. I remember turning up in the workplace to a bunch of strangers, because I hadn't built relationships with them, because he'd isolated me from everyone around me. And all I felt was love when I came in with, you know, very disheveled and actually a black eye. And all to feel the love from people around me didn't know me really. And that moment, I said, I'm never going to let a man hurt me again. But instead of turning cynical, I had passion for that man, because he didn't know how to express himself any other way except through his fist. And that's fine. Well, fine at all. But I couldn't make him wrong. Well, once I'd accepted it. And I see, well, he's only doing the best he can, and that's not great. but that's never going to be good enough for me again. And so instead of turning cynical and against men, the opposite happened. I want to help men. And so that started a trajectory of, you know, becoming from one position into I've had my clients call me angel. You're just an angel sent to help me understand this thing called love and women. Oh, to have that at such a young age is perfect. It's led me to where I am.
And where you are now is someone that all our male listeners out there could probably want to contact to be able to partake of some of that angelness, if we can have angelness as a word. Don't know if we can, but I've just coined it. We're going to have angelness as a word. My final question to you, and it's one that I ask all my guests, what do you think makes a great speaker and why?
One of my number one values is authenticity. So I'm all about being authentic and speaking honestly. So for me, a great speaker who moves me is somebody who doesn't necessarily stick to the script and sense what's happening in the room, or is thrown a question left field and they can go with that and I can deliver the message that the room needs versus what agenda they believe they want to set. Sometimes you need that as a start point. People come to hear a topic, but the way you deliver it, I think, comes from authentically reading the room and listening to yourself and kind of responding in the most appropriate way in that manner. That's what moves me, and I can see that happening in the room. You feel the shift, people leaning in, and you know, they're hooked on the message and the value that's being shared. That to me is a good speaker.
Thanks so much for sharing that, Mel. I can't agree more. I believe that if you can be authentic and genuine, you are three quarters of the way there. So, Mel, if people want to be and part of that angelness, where can they find you if they want to know more?
Yeah, so I have a website, which is datingwithkismet, KIZMET.com.
Okay. So if anybody
and of
wants
course
to know
on,
more
on those, social media as well, sorry.
Yep. Yeah, on Facebook, if you look at Dating with Kismet there on Facebook, it will come up. If you have questions, if you are a guy out there who's wondering why you're getting it so wrong or what's happening or that, it's not all about you. It's certainly not always all about you. It is okay to be wanting to step up and ask about that. So contact Mel Bowman because she'll help you. She'll be able to give you an indication. She works with you one-on-one and right around the world, don't you, Mel? You can help anybody over internet. So,
and email. If anybody wants to email me direct, then they absolutely can, which is mel@datingwithkismet.com. It's my personal private email address.
There you go. All your questions, all your queries, you can contact Mel. Thank you so much, Mel, for being with us, and thank you for persevering through your technology problems. I appreciate that. Very much enjoyed speaking with you today, and I think we've raised some really interesting issues, and it's really wonderful to see and speak with someone who has a caring heart for the guys out there who could be struggling in today's society. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, as usual, people, I finish with a quote, and today's quote I thought was pretty applicable. It's, in every single thing you do, you are choosing a direction. Your life is a product of choices. Now, that's from Dr. Kathleen Hall from Alter Your Life. Now, everything you do, and that means when you step up today, when you decide to put something up there on a dating online service, when you start a relationship, whether it's a friendship or whether it's a relationship with a female or a relationship with a guy or friends between that, you choose the direction that you want to take that. And your choices will determine where you go in life. Now, Mel has been sharing with us parts of her life, parts of the choices that she's taken, but she's also been sharing with us some of the views on the choices that happen when you're dating. And what evolves from that. So think about that. Your choices are a product and they are what's going to be driving your life. So make those choices. Make them with a clear mind. Make them knowing that what you choose is where you're going to go. You've been with Trish Springsteen and it's Step Up and Speak Out with Trish. We've been speaking with Mel Belmont. We've covered a whole range of factors in this show. If you need to contact me and you want to ask a question or you've got an FAQ or you would like me, if you might have a suggestion for someone that you would like to hear me interview, you can contact me at info@trischel.com.au. And of course, you can connect with me on Facebook, Trischel Innovative Communication Training, or just put Trish Springsteen in and look for the person who's always wearing purple and you'll come find me on Facebook. Or you can go to my website, trishspringsteen.com. That's TRISHSPRINGSTEEN.com. And if you'd like to book me to speak at your event or at one of your meetings, you can do there. And if you'd like to have a discovery session, you can do those so there. So until we meet in our next show, I hope that your dating is successful. I hope that your choices are where you want to be and that you have an awesome time. See you next time.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Thanks, Mel. I'll catch you later.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.